Vaishnav, Narada Muni, is speaking this verse. And he's referring to Lord Brahma. My dear father, you know everything, and you are the controller of all. Therefore, may all that I've inquired from you be kindly instructed to me, so that I may be able to understand it as your student. Purport, very, very short purport, so please listen up. The inquiries made by Narada Muni are very important for everyone concerned. And as such, Narada requested Brahmaji to deem them suitable so that all others who may come in the line of disciplic succession of Brahma Sampradaya may also know them properly without any difficulty. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesa Sunyavadi Pastyatya De Satarine Vanchakalpa Dhrubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaho Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasiti Gaur Bhaktarindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Narada Muni is placing relevant questions to his father, Lord Brahmaji, who is known as he calls him you are the controller of all. At least he's given that power within the realm of the material energy. Ultimately, we understand the supreme controller of all is Lord Sri Krishna, Ishvara Parma Krishna Satchidananda, Anadi Radhi Govinda, Sarvakarna Karna. He is the supreme controller, but he designates his power to others to control on his behalf. And in this case, Lord Brahma is controlling or has the position of making sure that the orders of the Lord or the arrangements of the Lord are carried out in the material realm, in that universe where he is, Lord Brahma. So in that way, he's referred to the controller of all. But if we read it without that understanding, we think, oh, just like Hirani Kashipu thought that Lord Brahma was the controller of all, and he worshipped Brahma as the supreme. But then Brahma told him, after he requested to be immortal, he said, I can't give you that because I'm not also immortal. So Brahma made it clear that although he's powerful and grants benedictions, still, he's controlled by another controller, Krishna. But he's powerful. And here, Narada Muni's inquiring how to receive transcendental knowledge and how to accept transcendental knowledge in such a way that that knowledge will be understandable. So sometimes we have to understand that there is a reason for clarification, or reasons for understanding things deeper than what is being expressed. So what is that? Prashna, or questions. We have to ask questions in order to somehow hear more clearly or more understandably or more practically applicably what is being understood. Because knowledge takes different features. And therefore, one of the features is to understand it. The other one is to apply it. And if it's not applied, then it remains theoretical. So Narada wants to know how to, not only to understand the knowledge, but so he can apply it, and how, so he can give that same knowledge to others. He's not only concerned of his for himself and his own understanding, but he wants to understand so he can have that ability or that acumen to give that same knowledge to others. So this is the whole process of receiving knowledge. Evam param param praptam evam rajasayo vidu. And that knowledge comes in disciplic succession from the Supreme Lord into the hearts of the leaders of the Sampradaya. In this case, we have Lord Brahma. And then they distribute that knowledge. And gradually it comes down from Guru to Guru all the way down to the present situation. And then this is how knowledge is given. There's nothing new under the sun. You don't have to create knowledge. You can take knowledge and explain it in different ways so that knowledge can be applied accordingly and understood from different angles of vision. But there's no such thing as new knowledge. Everything is already there. I mean, Krishna gives everything. And through the Vedas are called Shruti, and Shruti contains everything that to be known and everything that will be known. So it's complete, but then again, for our own edification and understanding, those who have that ability take that knowledge and apply it and explain it in different ways. So we write books, or we give lectures, or we speak the same knowledge, but without changing the essential principles that is given, so that knowledge remains intact. Because nowadays, and it's a certain feature of Kali Yuga, that people like to come up with something new, something different. And so Prabhupada used to say, yes, this is the Western disease, because not only the Western disease, but it's the disease of the restless mind, to take something and try to explain it in a way that is new and different and somehow or other will be seen as something that is revolutionary. But Prabhupada used to say, according to his own understanding, I never changed anything that my spiritual master gave me. I simply presented it according to how he gave it, according to the Western mentality. That's all. So the adjustment was, you know, time, place, and candidate, according to those who understand it in a certain way. But the knowledge remains the same. So this is the mindset of those who are in that position to give knowledge, is that they take that knowledge that's given to them and simply repeat it in a way that is understandable, and they also help by giving instructions on how to use that knowledge in day-to-day life. If we can't take transcendental knowledge and apply it to our day-to-day life, then we will not understand what Krishna consciousness is. It has to be understood and applied. And that requires an inquiry. Therefore, inquiry means for clarification. Where do you get that clarification? From those who know. We might say the spiritual master, or someone on the level of the spiritual master, or those who have that understanding. And that is how this knowledge goes on. And it remains pure. It doesn't change. Change in the essence is that it's like, Hare Krishna. I can talk about my history in Krishna consciousness. It's been like, now, when I was in one particular place in America, it was very fashionable to try to come up with something new, something different, something that looked spiritual, but it was mixed in with one's own ideas. And what happened is it just derailed the whole yatra, and everything went down because it didn't have the authority. It was just done to present something new, something different, mix it in here, try this. Well, he said that, she said this, let's put it together and see if we can synthesize it into something even better. Yeah. So yeah, this is Kali Yuga. So and I mean, people just write so many books. You see, so many useless books on the market, just wasting paper, killing trees for nothing. For what? Just for somebody's regurgitation of their their flickering mind. But if you read Prabhupada, just read Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know everything. He actually said just Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's there. Everything is there in Bhagavatam. But to unpack it, to explain it, to understand it, as we unpack it and explain it, that requires certain credentials or certain abilities. And Narada Muni, he wants that. So he can take that same knowledge and present it to others. So he's compassionate. He's not selfish. He's not just self-interested. He wants that everyone can benefit from this. And this is the desire of the Supreme Lord. So knowledge is power. It's power. When you have knowledge, you have power. You may have guns and you may have ammunition, you may have soldiers and you may have good muscles and many other, so many things that look like strength and fortifications. But when you have knowledge, you're free. It's like when Prabhupada received a report from one very senior devotee who was preaching in Argentina. We had so much trouble there, the government and others were always harassing us. And at one time the government decided to shut down our temple, so they came in with military and just closed the whole place down. Closed the temple, pushed all the devotees out, and that was it. We didn't have any temple anymore. So the report that came to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, they say, now you're dead, and after that, they can't do anything. So they think they can stop the Krishna consciousness movement through the... But when you have knowledge, you're free. So that knowledge carries you continuously through all of the different challenges in life. And what is that knowledge? Jivera Supai Krishnera Nityadas. Well, we are eternal servants of Krishna. And we are not this material body, and Krishna is the supreme controller, and devotional service to Krishna is the essential principle by which everything unfolds perfectly and, what we say, completely. In other words, Krishna is pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, then everything is there. So learning this knowledge and learning how to apply the knowledge is actually the mindset of a devotee on the path of devotional service. But the process of hearing has to be there, because if we hear and we cannot recall or understand, then it becomes hard. I was just reading Janarani, the original Janarani, she wrote a book, The Art of Spiritual Life. And she was... she was explaining. He's explaining all of her experiences with Srila Prabhupada. So at one point, she and another devotee were with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had just completed the class. And Prabhupada came into the room and said, "What did I say in class?" And the other devotee said, "Well, I can't remember." He was honest. He didn't try to make up anything. And then Janarani said, she did say one thing, and that she remembered. She could only remember one thing, as she indicated. And then Prabhupada took that one thing and he expanded on it, and there was a kind of an impromptu conversation about that point. And then they started to discuss it even deeper. So yeah, Prabhupada was quizzing his disciples just to see, how much do you actually remember? In New Vrindavan, what we used to do in order to help recall after the class is that we had a program that you'd have to ask one particular devotee, anyone, during the day, what did they say in class? And If you didn't come up with anything, then it means you were sleeping. And that was a big problem in New Vrindavan. Most of the devotees fall asleep during the class. And even the speakers sometimes. That happened a few times. And it was a workforce, you know. We were working so hard that when we would sit down, we'd fall asleep immediately. No matter where we were, it didn't matter. Even during prasadam, it was no problem sleeping at night. If we got that far anyway. So, yeah, it was just, I mean, these were the old days of Krishna consciousness. You might say the pioneer days. And so it was like that. And so in order to inspire recall and also help bring about, you know, Krishna Katha, we would ask devotees, what did they say in class? And that immediately, you got Krishna Katha going. And that means we're focused on the essence. And so that was one way. But it's explained that in the Padma Purana that the process of hearing contains three elements, and the fourth one is the results of the first three. And it explains that hearing knowledge as it's being spoken means to have faith that the person who's speaking is qualified to speak. That's the first thing. Second is to not try to filter what is being said through your intellect. In other words, try to hear submissively with an open mind, and at the same time try to understand as you're hearing. And the third principle is destroying the faults of the mind. It's called when the mind wanders to something else, bring it back to the sound vibration. And the mind will wander. That's the nature of the chanchala hi mana krishna pramiti balava dridha. Krishna explains the mind is restless, turbulent, unsteady. That's Arjuna speaking. And Krishna says, yeah, you're right, but practice. Practice that process of hearing. And so when we do the first three, then the results are the fourth. And there's two possible results. One is you get realizations based on what you hear. Oh, yes. And you can connect with that, and you hear. You understand. In other words, you agree. And the second one is, if that doesn't happen, or along with that, either one, you ask questions. And so Padma Purana explains this is the results of proper hearing. We either get understandings, or we ask questions for clarification or further information. Like that. So that is the process of hearing. And then the process of hearing is the process of awakening our relationship with Krishna. Because hearing goes directly into the heart, into the mind, and it awakens our attachments to Krishna. When that hearing is done according to these principles that we just mentioned. So Narada Muni, he understands the importance of inquiring from someone who has that knowledge. And that's very important to inquire, because transcendental knowledge is not easily understandable. In fact, that because it's called transcendental, it's beyond the range of the mind, the body, and the senses. Yet, it's like I was just reading yesterday, there was an explanation in the Srimad Bhagavatam given by Pipalayana. He's speaking to the King Nimi, and he's giving the process of devotional service. So in the purports, he's explaining that that you cannot understand transcendental knowledge or explain transcendental knowledge by your mind, by your senses, by your intelligence. It is beyond that range. But then again, another point is that there is a way to explain it, and that comes from the authority. So those who are pure can explain it, and those who are less than in that can understand it and eventually purify themselves, and then they can understand as they hear from those who are pure. So the principle was that unless you are on that purified platform, then you take the pure knowledge and you can understand it and explain it. But if you're not, then you have to hear until you reach that stage of understanding. So it's an ongoing process. It's not that we know or don't know. We know so much according to our level of progress in devotional service. So, in other words, the Vedas do explain that knowledge, but for us to understand it requires, you know, submissive hearing, questions, clarifications, associations with those who are practicing. All of that comes through this process of hearing. So then it becomes easily understand. That which is beyond the range of the senses becomes accessible. That is called transcendental knowledge or intuitive knowledge, that knowledge that's understood simply by the process of what we hear, pure hearing, or pure speaking, pure hearing. When the speaker is pure, the hearer is pure, the knowledge immediately connects and realizations come automatically and completely. So we want to come to that platform, so we have to practice. So when Arjuna asked that question that the mind is turbulent and restless, unsteady, and to control the mind is like controlling the wind, Krishna ultimately said, yeah, you're right, but you have to do two things. You have to continue to hear. Continue to hear. And then Prabhupada explains you have to hear with rapt attention. So then he qualifies that, what does rapt attention mean? He says that one has to be pure in mind. But then he says, to be pure in mind, you have to be pure in activity. And to be pure in activity, you have to be pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In other words, these bodily requirements need to be regulated in such a way that they don't interfere with the process of, you know, and devotional service. And then, so the conclusion is, or the understanding is that the positive point is to hear, the other point is to regulate your life in such a way that you're able to hear properly. In other words, you don't get too much absorbed in the material energy. We might have to deal with the material energy, but the material energy is something that we can get so entangled with that when it comes to the process of hearing, you know, we can't hear or we can't understand if we have too much connected to the material energy. Or too much attached to that same connection. Attachment means we're still looking for something in the material energy to give us some satisfaction, some fulfillment, some success in life. But that is a preliminary requirement. Prabhupada also says that you begin your process of Krishna consciousness when you've come to the understanding there's no happiness in the material world. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Kida. So that is a prerequisite for understanding knowledge and making progress on devotional service. When we actually come to the understanding, hey, this material world is what Krishna says it is. It's dukalayam, asasratam. It's temporary and it's always miserable. Not just sometimes. What is that misery? Well, some of the misery is called material happiness. That's another form of misery. Why? Because it takes your attention away from Krishna. In other words, you're trying to enjoy or you're getting some satisfaction in some material activity and you focus on that and then you forget Krishna. So that's another form of misery, because forgetting Krishna means to suffer, to be in the wrong consciousness, because we are naturally Krishna conscious. So material energy and everything concluded, the three modes of material energy, as Krishna says, it's miserable. And when we come to that understanding, we can come by realization, we can come by theoretical acceptance. Theoretical acceptance ultimately leads to realization, but realization is the actual goal. What is that theoretical acceptance? Yeah, there's no happiness in this material world. And Prabhupada was talking about that. So, and he's talking to his disciples and he's saying there's no happiness in the material world, and he's giving so many examples and he's talking this. So, one devotee says, well, Prabhupada, you know, the mode of goodness, it says there's happiness in the mode of goodness. You know, challenge the guru. You know, we did that. People challenged Prabhupada a lot, not just a few times, but and it was good. Prabhupada didn't mind that if it was done in the right way, and that way it brought out more and more knowledge. So, yeah, so this devotee was saying, well, Prabhupada, the mode of goodness is characterized by happiness. But Prabhupada said, yes, but the mode of goodness is characterized also by knowledge, and that knowledge tells you there's no happiness here. So he shut that down quite fast. Another devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we are eternal, and so is Krishna eternal. So everyone say he is eternal and we are eternal. So we are just as eternal as he is. So why not? Why aren't we the beginning? We could be also the beginning. We give Krishna the credit for being the beginning, and he's eternal. I'm eternal. Eternal, eternal means it's equal, right? So maybe we're the beginning. Prabhupada didn't like that too much. So he said yes, but there is the sunshine and there's the sun. And you are the sunshine, and Krishna is the sun. So you're right, you're both eternal, but without the sun, there's no sunshine. So I thought that was an interesting response to that. So yeah, this transcendental knowledge, you when it's given as a way to elevate people's consciousness towards Krishna, it is called the highest form of welfare work. Those knowledge, when you have knowledge, you're free. What is that knowledge? That ultimately you are eternal. You're full of knowledge and you're full of bliss. And you don't die. That's the good news. Death is simply foreign to the soul's existence. So therefore fear of death is another form of illusion. Why? Because we don't die. So when we have that knowledge, we know that we don't die. We every night we go to sleep at night. And We enter into a state of forgetfulness, but we still remain alive in a subtle form. And death is sometimes called a temporary state of death. Sleep is sometimes called a temporary state of death. But then we come back again. So just like sleep is temporary and you wake up the next morning, so when you leave this body, you're going to wake up in another body. It's just like going to sleep and waking up again. So that's eternal, because the soul never touches the material energy, although it appears to. So this knowledge given by is very important. So therefore, the process of hearing regulus, shrinvata svataka svakuta krishna purnya shravana kirtana, ridyanto sto abhidani vidhunoti surhitsatam. So you might say, well, yeah, I understand the process of hearing, but I have no taste for hearing. How do I develop a taste for hearing? Well, there's two ways. There is the way that people have a hard time with. We say, just do it, that's all. Well, yeah, okay, I'm doing it, but I still don't have any taste. So how do you develop a taste? But then there's a scientific, spiritual way you develop a taste. Sushrusha sharadanasya vasudeva kata ruchi shanvayat seva vipra purnyate sevana tirtana. That by serving great souls, great service is done. And by such service, one develops an affinity to hear the message of the Lord. So when you serve Vaishnavas, and especially those who are fixed in Krishna consciousness, automatically Krishna in the heart awakens that desire to hear about him more and more. And as that increases more and more, then we can become fixed in the process of hearing, and then gradually the anarthas start to become revealed and ultimately destroyed through the process of hearing and executing devotional service. So serving great souls is so important because it awakens that process of hearing, which is the essential principle, because the whole Bhagavatam is based on someone speaking, someone hearing. And that same person hearing is also speaking later and giving that same knowledge to someone else who is hearing, who will also. So each and every one of us can come to the platform of hearing and understanding and speaking, and then Krishna consciousness will spread so fast. We want more and more devotees to understand this knowledge, apply this knowledge, and to give this knowledge to others, because it's the highest form of welfare work. It's the most needed. Just like maybe even now, but not as much. In the last 2 years, people were, in general, the society was very confused. And that confusion led, or the fear that was given, led to a state of confusion. People were lost, not knowing how to act or what to do. They were told what to do, which was causing them more and more fear. And so when you give people knowledge, then they can somehow come out of that confused state and then be free from fear, because fear is the worst thing. When one is somehow affected by fear, one cannot function. Fear is so debilitating. And that's what the media is trying to do. It creates fear. When people get into a fearful state, they can be told anything, and they want to hang on to something that will convince them that they could get out of their fearful state, which is caused by another situation, and therefore they'll grab to whatever's there. But they give them the same thing that causes the fear, and the fear only becomes worse. But we have transcendental knowledge. We have that knowledge that can destroy fear. And what is that fearlessness? That ultimately the soul doesn't touch the material energy. You are eternally connected with Krishna, and Krishna is your supreme shelter and your supreme principle of being free from all fear. Because when you take shelter of Krishna, Rakhe Krishna Moreke, More Krishna Rakeke, there's no fear. Why? Because nothing can touch one who's taken shelter of Krishna. And that's a whole nother class. We can speak about that. Just like I was in Radha Desh in the beginning, at the end of January. And so, you know, the element of fear was still strong around that time, and it still is now, but even more so then. So I gave a class on the first canto, first chapter, verse number 14, where Krishna, where Suta Goswami speaks that fear personified is afraid of Krishna. Even fear personified, which causes everyone to become full of anxiety, can't touch Krishna. He is, of course, obviously, he's the controller of everything. So I was, you know, I gave this class, and then I was talking to Sachinandana Swami after class. He was also there. So he asked me, and we were talking, and I said, I gave a class, and I explained. He said, "Oh, you want to hear a story?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "It's an antidote. It's an antidote." So he said, there was one man, he's walking around his town, small town, and he sees this man standing at the gate of the town, and he's dressed all in black. So he's curious, so he goes up to the man. He says, "Who are you?" And the man's got a hood over his face, and he's dressed in black, and he lifts his hood, and he says, "I'm Death." "Oh." "And I've come to this town, and within 1 month, I'm going to take 500 people. So he tells them, his plan. Now the man is really getting full of anxiety, so immediately he leaves the association of death. And now he's got the news, 500 people in the town will die. And so he goes and tells everyone. He makes it public that 500 of us are going to die within the next month. And so be careful, take precautions. He's trying to warn them ahead of time. But he doesn't know what he's doing, really. So at the end of 1 month, 5,000 people died. Not 500, 5,000. So death is still standing by the gate, and the same man, he made it. So he's going, and he goes to death, and he says, you know, you told me 500 were going to die, but you took 5,000. He said, yes, I took 500, but fear took 4,500. Yeah, that's true. And that's what's happening now. People are getting sick and dying, and because they're fearful. Fear is debilitating. So therefore, Rake Krishna, Moreke, More Krishna. One takes shelter of Krishna, then one becomes fearless. How do we do that? When we chant the holy names with attention. And take shelter of the devotees in association. Then there's no fear. Even the fear of death, which is the ultimate fear, as Shakespeare used to say, there's the rub, can't touch a devotee. Because they know, all right, well, I have a material body, it'll come at some point, but there's no reason to be fearful. The only fear is not to waste time in useless activities, which have no value. Use your time in the best possible way, then whatever you do during that time will be beneficial to your ultimate, you know, goal of becoming Krishna conscious. That's the fear of a devotee. Devotees don't want to waste time. Because time is so precious. Time is precious. It's very precious, especially as you get older. You start really, you know, it's like... And nowadays, who knows who's old and who's young anyway? So it's a whole different thing. But old age is an indication that, you know, time is running short. And therefore, when you get old, you don't waste any time because, you know, you know, I have to prepare myself for that final moment and to remember Krishna with devotion at the time of death. So this knowledge is freedom. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is freedom. Knowledge leads to transcendental happiness. So that this is the greatest form of wealth. Transcendental knowledge is the highest form of wealth. When you have transcendental knowledge, you're free. And you're happy. And you use that transcendental knowledge to help others and at the same time to engage in devotional service. Okay, so Narada Muni, he's very magnanimous. He'll take the knowledge that Brahmaji gives, he'll understand it in such a way that he'll travel everywhere and give that knowledge to others. So he's a great soul. And one of the most important, he's called Devarish. He is the Rish of the demigods. His knowledge is complete. He's considered the most knowledgeable of all the devas. Okay, so any comments or questions on anything? We have a question somewhere? Oh, okay, yes, Madhu. Chintamani, right? Yes, Hare Krishna.
I wanted to thank you for a very nice class, Maharaj, and I just reiterate some of the key points that I picked up from you. The importance of hearing and the importance of transcendental knowledge, that's the greatest wealth, and we get this transcendental knowledge by proper hearing, but also by regulating our lives in such a way that we can absorb what we're hearing. You cited, I think, 1344 about if our habits are not pure, we can't hear properly. So we need to regulate our lives. And if we hear properly and we acquire that transcendental knowledge, that will set us free from fear. We'll become fearless. Those were some of the key important points of your class that have stuck with me. I just wanted to maybe share one point.
Yes, please.
If that's permissible. Because I remember one place Prabhupada was saying that you can see things from different lights. So I just wanted to bring in an additional light. This helped me personally a lot in trying to improve my hearing. Because I remember reading the purport that you were referring to in your class, that if one is not attentive and one can't be attentive if they're not pure, and you can't be pure if your habits are not pure. And at that point, I was feeling so discouraged. And then I was listening to Prabhupada lectures, and I heard this one little snippet that really helped me, and I hope it can help others. In this one lecture, Prabhupada said, generally people cannot understand, but it is not very difficult. If they discuss, they will very easily understand.
Yeah. Mm, very good point.
And and since then, even though I'm not pure, unfortunately, but just try discussing a little bit every day, it's beginning to help me.
Yeah. Bodhyantas parasparam kudyantascha mam nityam tushyantija ramantija. Yeah, the very good point. And it's an essential point because that discussion brings so much awareness of what you're talking about from different angles of vision when you speak it. That's why it says that those who actually speak regularly what they hear, their recall is even greater. Because it turns into discussions and getting greater angle. And you can see the same principle from different angles of vision. Yeah, this is a great science. And very good. That's a very, very, very important point you made. Thank you. So, therefore, maybe devotees should start discussion groups. Maybe it's already going on, but we need more of them. Just sit together, pick some topics, and discuss it. Yes, Nishchintya? Is that right?
Nishkinchana.
Yeah.
Huh?
Nishkinchana, okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful class. Maharaj, you know, you're mentioning that, you know, that obviously knowledge is power. Do you mean like on a transcendental level? Like, because I'm sorry, I'm probably looking on a very mundane level, but you know, when you look at throughout history, there's been many cases when spiritualists, people with knowledge, the right knowledge, they have been killed or massacred throughout history, all the way from Bhagavatam to
now. There's knowledge and there's nescience. Nescience looks like knowledge, but it's not. It's the knowledge that within the three modes of material nature, which is all about the body. That's not given the definition of knowledge. Knowledge is something above the three modes. We're talking about transcendental knowledge. Or the knowledge about Krishna, the knowledge of devotional service. That's knowledge. The knowledge of our sambandha, avideya and prayojana, the three principles, the three categories of the Vedas. So all the knowledge within those three categories, that's knowledge.
So is it that the transcendental knowledge and transcendentalists, like even if, let's say, materially they're being suppressed or subdued, like even in ISKCON, right, there are certain countries where they've been attempted to subdue them or in some cases kill them, then somehow it'll find its way out. Like if it's so powerful, it can override like the material forces.
Well, you think death is the end of everything? Death is not the end of everything. And we don't really know. We can't see the whole picture. Why things happen the way they do. We can't point and say, well, they had transcendental knowledge and they died, therefore transcendental knowledge doesn't work all the time. That's not... Transcendental knowledge will prepare you for, you know, a higher destination once you leave the body. I mean, we have the example of Socrates, when Socrates was preaching against the church at the time. And the church warned him not to. He was preaching reincarnation. And they warned him to stop under the penalty of death. But he continued. So they sentenced him to death, and by giving him poison, they said, and they said before Socrates, what should we do with you after you die? He said, well, first you have to catch me, but as far as my body concerned, you can do whatever you want with that. So he knew. He knew he was not the body.
Hare Krishna, thank you for that. I just have a question about the submissive hearing. You said, if I heard correctly, that we should not filter through the intellect what we hear.
Try to understand it as you hear it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's the active intent. When you're trying to understand what you hear, that's you're activating your intelligence.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. That's part of the hearing process. A necessary part, yeah. And as you try to understand it, you get either realizations or questions. Is that okay? Yeah, thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for your class. I just have a quick question based on the first part where you emphasized the importance of the books. And a lot of times when we're out in the streets doing book distribution, I get sometimes people which say, oh, I'm not a big reader, I can't read those big books, or even the small books, they struggle with them. Or I get people which already bought the books, and then when I ask them, did you read them? They say, no, I didn't have time. So I was just curious if you have any point on how we can go about with those people, how we can get them more engaged.
Well, there's different answers to that. Like Krishna Dharma, he's making it easier for people you're talking about to understand it. He takes Bhagavatam and explains it in a way that is more simplified and more in a story version. And people like stories. If you give them a story as opposed to a series of verses with Sanskrit and transliteration and Devanagari, yeah, they're going to be more inclined to stories. This is the average person like that. So part of that service to the acharyas is to take that knowledge and repackage it and give it. We do it in the form of classes, and we do it in the form of books like that. That's a service. The Goswamis did the same thing with the knowledge they received from Lord Chaitanya. So that's a service. So we're trying to do that, and so it becomes more and more acceptable to people on different levels. And that's one way. Now, if it doesn't even work on that level, then you can say, well, just, you know, we have some audios. You can listen to the audios. Yeah. And that's another way of... So maybe you can... You know, sell them a CD with some classes or something like that. And then that way they can go about their business and hear at the same time. They think, oh, I'm not wasting any time hearing. You know, different ways. These are some of the answers. Anything else? Prabhu, yeah.
Maybe just one comment to this and some question. Last question. If you really in preaching don't connect with aspirations or problems of others and really hit their heart presenting this philosophy in such a way as a solution, then they will probably not pick up their book for a long time.
Not become?
They will not pick up the book and read for a long time.
They won't pick up a
or
book.
If ever in this life. So this kind of one thing you have to know. You have to be able to connect with their core of their problem, aspiration, somehow or other. And those who were connected in that way, they come.
Yeah.
Ask anyone here.
People's minds are so restless, they can't.
So,
So the visual is more acceptable by people. Videos are seem to be, you know. But if you combine the video with the audio and you make the audio transcendental, then that's nice.
Another point would be like in connection with Mother Chintamani's hope Prabhupada gives us, like you cannot hear properly if you don't have purity of the heart, purity of habits, right. And so forth. And then said, if you discuss, you can hear, but if your heart is not pure, if you feel, if it's really not pure, even if by discussing, can you really understand?
Yeah, because discussion starts to activate the intelligence, and then you start becoming more and more aware of things as you discuss it. You don't think of everything until discussion automatically brings to surface a lot of things you don't even think of. It happens automatically. And when you're discussing with two or three people, so much comes out. You find out you don't even have enough time to discuss it. You run out of time before you run out of discussion. Yeah, it works. Yeah. As soon as people start discussing, they actually feel more a part of what they're doing when they start discussing it.
Can I just one more point? Sorry.
But there's one point that I wanted to mention to Chintami when in that same purport that Prabhupada said, after he says everything, and he said, but just hear. In other words, okay, maybe you're not pure in mind, pure in activities, pure in eating, sleeping, in it. All right, but just hear. Give it a try. Don't give up. It's not that I haven't come to that stage of, you know, purifying my activities, therefore, why should I waste time hearing? I'll do that first. No, probably just hear anyway.
Also, is maybe one of the reasons, like in the past, devotees were working so, so hard that they were not able to hear properly, actually. And by this, they couldn't understand the knowledge, so therefore many left, maybe due to that, due to overwork or whatever.
Well, if you want to simplify your life in terms of your material activities, then you'll find it's easier to hear. Simplicity is one of the features of a more peaceful mind, which makes hearing more accessible. We get too much entangled with material activities, then it becomes hard to hear. Because the mind's in that direction, yeah. So, simplicity is one of the features or one of the qualities that is necessary to adopt and apply in our Krishna consciousness.
What would simplicity mean, like in terms of...
What you see is what you get.
That's aspiring for something.
In other words, there's no hidden agendas. You're simple. Become simple. Simple in eating, simple in sleeping, simple in, you know, when you, you know, there's... You know, everything is so sophisticated and so complex in today's world. But Krishna consciousness is the opposite. Simple. Just chant Hare Krishna. That's simple. Come to the Bhagavatam class. That's simple. I mean, simplicity is explained, yeah. As live according to your needs, not according to your greeds. Okay, yes. I just should say, if anyone feels that they have to leave, you can leave. But we're still going here. There's another question. So, if you have some service or anything, please feel to leave without any problem. Okay, Chintamani, yes. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a testament to your class that you've created so much response at the end of it, you know, that devotees are enlivened to reciprocate, so thank you. And I only wanted to add something because of the kind of input that devotees are giving, it generated that another thought in me that I'd like to share. I think Prabhu was saying that, well, what if even in discussion, if we're impure, that's going to come through. And you very nicely put it. But I wanted to, you very nicely answered, but I just would like to add one thing. One thing that really struck me as I read Prabhupada's books, in Canto 3, Chapter 3, Text 6, I don't know a lot of Shastra, but this point really struck me. Prabhupada said, unless and until one is trained in the culture of good association, one cannot become good. So there's a certain way of discussing that will actually make us good. And, and it's explained in the Gita. Prabhupada says in 17:15, he says that discussion in spiritual circles, it should be very pleasing to the ear.
Yeah. It should, it shouldn't be like we're discussing just to show how much I know. That's not the idea. Discussion means to somehow or other awaken more knowledge and more information that we can, that everyone will benefit from that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. If it becomes competitive, it's not a discussion. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.